Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 31st. I'm Ray Graff. Yeah, today is Halloween, but it's also the latest edition of Pets and Vets. And joining us in the studio is Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs, New York. Got a question about your dog, your cat, or other pet? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you may email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, 800-348-2551. Dr. Chris Dallas and your pet questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program today, and here to take your calls is Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. Dr. Dallas specializes in treatment of chronic health issues in pets using an integrative approach with an emphasis on Chinese medicine. She earned a doctorate in veterinary medicine from Ohio State University and specializes in veterinary acupuncture, Chinese herbal medicine, geriatric care, and nutrition counseling. The number to call is 800-348-2551. That's 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. The lines are already loading up. Still a couple of open lines. Call now if you want to call. 800-348-2551. Dr. Chris Dallas, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ray.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. I missed out on a couple of times, and unfortunately, our friend Sue's not here today. Dr. Sekouli's sick, so.
Under the weather.
Under the weather.
That's too bad. Yes. Well, get well, Dr. Sue. Well, what's new with you?
What's new? Well, I've been expanding my practice a little bit and seeing some new interesting cases, and moved my office out of my house so that I could do some more interesting work, get some diagnostic work done and things like that.
Outstanding. What's the most interesting case you're working on now?
Well, I just got a call today from a woman in Lake Placid with a kitty cat, and I'm not sure what's going on with it. I'm not sure if I should ask her to come down and drive the 2 hours to see me, so we're trying to work that out, but he's not walking, unfortunately.
And that's, at all?
At all, yeah.
Not an old cat?
No, he's not an old cat. And Dr. Sekouli knows I'm going to be calling her after the show to do a little
consultation. She's the cat person, okay.
Yeah.
Well, this email came in before the show, and it pertains to cats. This is from Dee in Mountainville, New York. Dee writes, my 18-year-old female tabby has been on hyperthyroid meds and a special renal diet for several years. Lately, she has started moving much more stiffly and seems to have arthritic pain. Can you suggest any meds that will help her with the pain that will not adversely affect her aging kidneys? And that's from Dee.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, Dee, I would say for your kitty, if you have an acupuncturist near you, that would definitely be an amazing thing to do for your cat. Actually would help prolong the life of your cat's kidneys and would absolutely provide drug-free pain relief. If the pain is localized to one area, there's actually a new device out that's called the Assisi loop, and it's a pulsing electromagnetic loop, and this is actually FDA-approved device and is being used by board-certified pain specialists and surgeons and what have you. So if it's localized to one area, like the hips or just the knees, the device is...
How would you tell, though? The cat can't talk.
You can tell by doing a good exam and by the way they move. You know, if they're limping in the front end, then you get the head bob. And if it's in the back end, they're not jumping as much. And cats are small, so you can get a big loop and actually get a decent-sized, you know, section of their body covered. So I like that. And then there's always CBD oil, which is the cannabinoid oil.
Cannabinoid oil.
Yeah, which really are wonderful as well. And just give them an extra little spark.
I'm interested in this electromagnetic loop.
Yeah.
Explain.
So I was really skeptical, and even as an alternative vet, I was skeptical.
There's a lot of snake oil about magnets and things like that.
I know. And this one actually has scientific research behind it. It's FDA approved, which means it went through some rigorous testing. And when board certified pain specialists are looking at them, it caught my attention.
Right.
It's just a loop. It's flexible. You hold it over a body part, and it actually heals as well as it has anti-inflammatory effects, anti-pain effects, both. So it's great for injuries, but I find it most useful for more chronic issues. Like if I have a patient who tore an ACL and maybe had surgery, it can really facilitate the healing on that. I had another patient with just random forelimb pain, she wouldn't let me acupuncture her or even touch her to evaluate it. But we knew where it was, and it, you know, really took care of it. So it's surprisingly effective. The problem is you can only treat one body part at a time.
Is this something the animal wears?
Well, yes, it can be. If it's on the back, they can actually have jackets and all of these accessories that you can get. I just have my clients hold it. It's a 10-minute treatment.
Oh.
And you do it about twice a day for about a week, and then you go to once a day. And you can, if you're just working on one body part, it can be incredibly effective. Great for neck pain, back pain, things like that.
I'm interested in the science behind this. This is new on me. Has this been tried on people?
Pulse magnetic therapy? Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, I had a treatment done one time by a friend and colleague of mine, and it's done differently. It wasn't a loop, and it wasn't something that you could purchase. It was a very expensive machine that
she
had to sit on.
Right.
And it found my old injuries, like things I haven't felt in a long time, lit up, like my old hip pointer and my old sciatic pain and my old rotator cuff. It was really interesting.
You're too young to have so many old pains.
Well, yeah. I used to be an athlete.
Our number is 800-348-2551. Chris Dallas is our guest today. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mary Lou in Cobleskill. Hello, Mary Lou.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a rather simple call or question, but it's been bothering me for a while. Now, with people, when they have upper respiratory, the doctors no longer give them antibiotics or with a cold. Why do we give them to our pets?
Good question.
Great question. So it depends on what's going on, Mary Lou. If we are dealing with a small kitten who probably has herpes virus or Khaleesi virus, we won't necessarily or we shouldn't necessarily give them antibiotics for an upper respiratory if the discharge is clear and they're eating. But if we have a patient who is compromised and let's say it's keeping them from eating and the discharge is green and it's thick and it's going to take a long time to clear up, we will use antibiotics because they have a secondary bacterial infection, which will be treated appropriately with the antibiotic. And really, you know, cats can't go a long time without eating. They can really develop some major complications with their liver. So we do. And kittens, of course, are vulnerable for many reasons. But
of course they are. Yeah. So if we have a kitten and it's sneezing and the nose is running, kind of the eyes, and but it's all clear, then it's not necessarily that we have to go on an antibiotic?
I personally do not use antibiotics in that case if the kitty is eating well and the discharge is clear.
Okay.
Everybody has a different approach, but that's my approach.
Oh, I know. But I just thought if we don't do it to people, then why do we do it to our animals?
No, it's a fair question. And I think that we need to be really mindful of our antibiotic use in veterinary medicine just as much as
Use them too much and then they're not effective.
Yeah. And it disrupts the gut. And the gut, of course, is the source of our immune system. So it can become a vicious feedback cycle.
Well, thanks, Mary Lou, for the call. We appreciate it. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Chris Dallas is here on this Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. And we go to Joanne in Kingston. Joanne.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I have a 24-year-old cat. She looks very hale and hearty. Basically, she doesn't seem to look very frail at all at that advanced age. But she's barfing on the floor, but it's clear.
I'm sorry, she's doing what on the floor?
She's vomiting.
Oh,
on
vomiting.
The floor. Clear, though.
Yes.
Okay.
On the floor, I saw this morning. You know, it was a goodly amount.
Okay.
It looked like water.
Is it in the mornings usually?
I find it, in the morning, I find. Sometimes in the past, I found other stuff with a little bit of, greenish, brownish, you know, a little bit of that plus the clearer liquid.
Yeah.
And this morning, just clear liquid. I don't know.
Well, I'm not sure, but I would say one thing you could try is to try to give her a little snack before you go to bed. Does she eat twice a day, or do you have food out all the time?
Oh, no, I don't have food out all the time.
Yeah, good. Okay. I was just kind of assuming. So, you could give her a little snack before you go to bed and see if that prevents the vomiting in the morning. If not, honestly, with a 24-year-old cat, that's the thing. It's you know, how far do you want to go to find out what's going on? But some basic blood work can sometimes rule out some things that you could treat and just keep her feeling good without necessarily going to heroics to, you know, keep her alive till 30. And also, congratulations for having a 24-year-old cat. That's fantastic.
Well, thank you. All right. So you're saying then the conclusion is to give her a little food in the evening.
It's just an easy test to see if the vomiting is due to like an acid buildup and something benign. And if that, you know what I mean? And if it's not something benign, maybe you want to just at least have a vet take a look at her.
Very good.
Thanks, Joanne. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551, the number. Dr. Chris Dallas is our guest. Let's do one more before our first break.
Okay.
Laura in Massachusetts. Laura, you're on.
Hi, this is Laura from Lenox, Massachusetts. First, I want to say, Ray, I love your sense of humor.
Well, thank you.
Hi, Dr. Chris.
Hi, Laura.
I want to ask you, I have an 11-and-a-half-year-old dog. And I just want to know, what's the best way moving forward as these older dogs get stiff in their joints and back legs? He's a Labradoodle. He has long legs, and he's starting to get stiff, having trouble getting up a little bit. Once he's up, he's okay. But I just want to know, preventatively, what's the best thing for dogs arthritically as they get older?
Yeah, it depends on what you have available in your area. So
I'm in the Berkshire.
Yeah,
I haven't investigated.
Yeah, and that would be something to do, because if there's a holistic vet in your area, I would definitely consider acupuncture. You can turn the clock back a couple of years on your dog in terms of movement and vitality. It's amazing.
That's great.
Yeah, it really is. If there's nobody close by, though, the other possibility is somewhere in your area, and I'm not sure how far from you. I think a little bit closer to the New York border is a physical therapy center, a rehab center, and they have a pool and they have a water treadmill and they do a great job. And that is another sort of second best alternative or equally good alternative. You can even do both.
Okay.
But, movement is so important. In the summers, take advantage of it. Lots of swimming and as much as you can.
He does get a lot of exercise, but I'm noticing now that
And Adequan injections, which you can get from your vet, are really helpful it's an injectable joint supplement.
All right, Laura, we have to take a break here, but thank you for calling. Our number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vets Today. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. If you want to call in, Ray Graff here, and we are joined today by Dr. Chris Dallas. It's Pets and Vets, and a few emails here, and then back to the phones we shall go. This one's from Maria, who writes, I have my dog on what I believe is called the Next Guard. Can I also use a flea collar to prevent fleas and ticks from climbing on my dog? That's from Maria.
You could, although it seems like it would be overkill, so...
Yeah.
I feel like less is better.
Okay.
I'm more concerned about ticks at this stage than I am fleas, really.
Mm.
I personally like the Seresto collar for the
ticks.
That's what
we use. In fact, thank you for reminding me. We are now at the 7-8 month point, and I
got to
get a new one.
It's
tough,
and we're right in the middle of like a.
This is the time.
This is the heavy season.
All right, so this one is from Alex in Latham. Just yesterday, my grandmother was flying to Florida for the winter and couldn't get her cat on the cat carrier in time and had to leave her without her in order to make her plane. Now I'm watching the cat and wondering if you have advice on a safe and natural way to calm the cat to get into the carrier rather than giving it a sedative. Also, can you fly a cat by itself? And that's from Alex in Latham.
Alex, I do not know the rules on flying cats on their own. However, what you could try is one thing that there's a couple of things. You could get a spray that's a pheromone called Feel Away, but that's more like for the long-term game. I'm thinking short-term, a drop of lavender essential oil,
a
spritz of Rescue Remedy, and like 30 seconds later in the
carrier.
Really? Yeah.
So you don't recommend, say, Kitty Valium, something like that?
Oh, that can actually freak them out more sometimes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that would definitely be a backup. But since he was asking about natural
alternatives. Okay, fair enough. Well, that's your game. This one is from Kim. I am fostering some kittens for a local animal shelter, and we discovered that one of the kittens has an esophageal stricture. The shelter said there is probably nothing we can do about it, and hopefully the kitten will outgrow it. Also, this kitten happens to be an odd eye cat. He has one blue and one green eye. There are two parts of my question. One, To feed this kitten, I'm having to make a slurry of high-calorie pate food and powdered kitten formula because he cannot tolerate anything too particulate. I am concerned about his nutrition. Is there anything you can suggest to improve his calorie intake? That's the first question.
Okay, so for the first question, boy, it's too bad Dr. Sue's not here because this would be right up her alley. But yeah. I would say add a little bit of fat to the diet, so a little bit of coconut oil, or probably coconut oil would be the best thing, just because it's got some nice other effects to it, and just beef it up that way. But no, I think that's about all you can do at this point.
Okay, and the second question, is there any treatment you can suggest to alleviate the stricture?
No, not really. That's a tough one because, you know, certainly in terms of what I do, which is deal with unusual things, when you have a structural issue, you know, functional medicine doesn't always shine.
Yeah.
And this is a structural problem. I don't know if a touch of acupuncture would work. I've never worked on a kitten that small before.
Yeah.
I'm always willing to try those things because I always feel like it's, you know, worth a shot, but especially when there isn't anything else to go with it. But I'm going to have to like let that one sit for a minute, but I'm not thinking of anything off the top of my head for that. That's,
you know, you have
one.
Studied this a long time, and acupuncture seems to have a good track record in veterinary medicine. And yet there seems to be that random chance, like it'll work on some and others it will not work.
Yeah.
Why?
I think a lot of times when it doesn't work, you have a structural issue and it may be undiagnosed. A lot of times it's used inappropriately. You know, I have really learned to give my clients some realistic expectations of, because sometimes it is just, this is all we can do and let's just hope for the best.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like when Laura called with the 11.5-year-old dog from Lenox, Mass, I know that dog is going to respond beautifully to acupuncture because this is what I do, is just, you know, older dogs, and I watch the clock just turn back and then stay stable for a while. So a lot of it is case selection and just knowing who is really probably going to respond and who isn't. And then for everybody else, just saying, let's just hope. Let's just give it a shot. But a lot of times there are structural diseases that are behind it.
Chris Dallas is our guest today on Pets and Vets. And now back to the phones. Jan in Windsor. Is it Jan or Jan?
No, it's Jan.
Hi, Jan. You're on.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for taking my call. And Dr. Dallas, I'm wondering if you are familiar with the Keto Pet Sanctuary.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Actually, I had to pause for a minute, but yes, I am.
And I'm wondering, you know, what your thoughts are on putting dogs
on keto?
On a keto diet.
All right, what's a keto diet before you opine?
Yeah, so the ketogenic diet is a it's a high-fat diet. It accentuates fats as your source of calories versus proteins.
Mm-hmm.
And Jan, I'll tell you, you know, this is new enough for me that I am in the watch and wait mode with it. It makes sense to me. You know, I use a mostly raw diet for my patients, so it's heading towards the keto diet as it is. My clients are amazing, and they do tons of research, and several of them have brought it to me, and I have told them, you have my blessing. I feel comfortable with you trying it, especially for cancer patients. It seems to make sense to me. I have not seen any ill effects from it, but I'm not in a place where I'm recommending it yet just because it's new, and I'm hesitant to jump on new bandwagons until there's some history behind it. But I love that people are a little more, you know, innovative and early adopters with this type of thing. And I feel like if I'm making the suggestions, I have to be a little bit more conservative about it. But I am really open to it, certainly. And it does make sense to me. I worry about the pancreas, though. I will say that. I worry about a dog's pancreas. And I feel like if we're going to use it, we have to go slowly, not to shock the pancreas.
Okay. Yeah, the diet, I mean, they offer a diet plan based on your dog's age and weight and activity. And you literally measure things out in grams.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, I've met you once before. I brought my husky to your office.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I was starting to put him on it just because I thought he was acting so lethargic. And then I'm putting all my dogs on it.
Yeah.
But it's only been like 2 weeks. And I feel like it's good. I mean, it's a lot less volume.
Yeah.
So they're hungry.
Right.
But
well, keep
know.
Me posted, Jan. I mean, you've got my number. So, you know, I'd love to hear about it. But I would recommend that you just go slowly because we don't know who's got an easygoing pancreas and who doesn't. And once that pancreas gets irritated, it's really hard to cool it off.
All right, Jan. Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Dr. Chris Dallas is here from Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs. And we go now to Helena in South Hadley.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Sure. Just before I start, I heard the person talking about their cat getting upset going in the carrier.
Yeah.
I keep my carriers in either my living room or the bedroom, and I put treats in it. Mm-hmm. So they know it's a place where they can get something good.
Yeah.
So I haven't had trouble with them getting them into a carrier.
That's really a great idea, is just have it be like a normal part of the environment for a while. And I don't know how quickly he needed to get his cat in, or his grandmother's cat in the carrier, but for as far as long-term planning, that is a great idea.
Okay. Well, my question is about cat hyperthyroidism. Mm-hmm. My almost 12-year-old cat was just diagnosed with it, and I've been just started pilling him. And then I heard about this iodine-131 treatment.
Yep.
And I don't really even know enough to ask questions about it.
That's fine.
That's radioactive, right?
It is radioactive, and it's excellent. It's actually, it's really, for me, the treatment of choice. However, a couple of things that need to be done before you consider that. And with hyperthyroidism, that condition can mask underlying kidney disease. And so what we usually have people do before doing the definitive treatment for hyperthyroidism is we have people do what you're doing, which is give the pills, the oral medication, for a period of time to get the thyroid down to a normal level. Once we do that, we retest the blood to see how the kidneys are working. And if they're working well, then yes, your cat is a candidate for the I-131 treatment, which is a radioactive administration of iodine. And they, the last I heard and the last time I consulted with somebody on this, they were keeping cats for about 24 to 48 hours. And that's simply because they don't want their urine and feces that's, you know, slightly radioactive in your house. And so, they want to, you know, that's all like biohazard waste, basically. So, or actually radioactive waste.
Right.
So, anyhow, I would go through the steps that you're going through now. I would have your cat's blood work rechecked and then ask your vet about it. And, but it is the treatment of choice. The only caveat is they can develop another nodule and become hyperthyroid again. And I have seen that happen once. So just be aware that you may think that you're curing this condition, but in rare circumstances, you can have a hyperthyroid cat a few years down the road again.
Okay. So when you retest the blood, about how long do you stay on the medication? How long should it take for the thyroid levels to even out?
Usually it's like 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, not that long.
Yeah,
okay.
No, it's not that long. You don't have to wait forever. But the longer, the better. I mean, I personally would love if you did it, you know, 3 months, just because you are making, it's a big financial commitment and time commitment to get your cat treated. So it's good to know that you definitely have stable kidneys before you go that route.
Okay, so it's mostly to look at the kidneys. I'm just writing some notes.
Yeah,
good.
Sure.
Okay, and so I guess I should just call the places that I'm in Western Massachusetts.
And you know, I know. I don't know the places around here that are doing the treatment. I was doing most of my referring out when I was out in California. But your vet would know. I think you need to get a referral most times, because they're going to want to see that all the due diligence has been done.
Thank you for the call. It's Vox Pop Pets and Vets today. Chris Dallas is here and Denise in Glens Falls. Denise, you're next.
Hi. I'm just curious. I hike a lot on the weekends, and I have two dogs, a chocolate lab and an Australian Shepherd, and they run through the woods and play like crazy. And one of them, the chocolate lab, hurt his right front paw, and my vet said he has a soft tissue injury, and I thought it would heal up by now. It was like a month and a half ago I saw her with him, and he still limps when he first gets up in the morning, but then once he gets going, it's not that bad. But then at the end of the night, from walking him, I haven't hiked with him at all because I don't want him jumping on it, but I don't know if you have any suggestions that might make it heal a little quicker.
Yeah, so a couple of questions. How old is the lab?
He's about 3 years old.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So it's actually worse when he gets up, he walks it out, and then he's fine. And then if you do go for a walk, I know you're not letting him run around.
No, because she told me, keep him on his chain so he's not running.
When you go for your walks, does it seem to exacerbate again?
A little bit, and then he doesn't limp like he did when it first happened, but he does limp a little bit by the time we get home. But she said, just make sure you keep walking him, so because you know, I don't want him to get out of shape or anything like that.
I mean, obviously, without seeing him, you know, I'm not really sure, but it sounds that, I mean, the most common injury associated with this kind of activity would be like a biceps tendon tear or strain. And
she pulled on it and tugged on it and everything, and he didn't yelp. He didn't do, but he's a super easygoing dog. Like every lab is.
Yeah, I know. They have an incredibly high pain tolerance, but the most common thing is biceps tendonitis and or a tear. So, you know, you could go to a specialist and just get an ultrasound of it and see, you know, what they can find. If it's torn, then that would be a surgical repair. But if you want to go a more conservative route, I don't know if you heard the beginning of this program, but we were talking about pain management for an older cat. And this is a situation where the pulse magnetic loop would actually be really appropriate.
Oh.
So did you hear the beginning of the show?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so that a CC loop in this case might be something worth trying if you want to wait before doing diagnostics to see if it's a surgical situation. So, I would look into that. Talk to your vet and see if they know anything about it.
About a CC loop?
Yeah, it's called the Assisi loop, like, you know, St. Francis of Assisi.
Oh, really? Assisi?
Yeah, Assisi, yeah.
Oh,
A-S-S-I-S-S-I, yeah.
Oh, how do you spell it again?
I think it's two, isn't it? Two
I think it's two S's.
Two S's both times?
Yeah, I think so.
A-S-S-I-S-S-I, like St. Francis of Assisi.
Oh, okay.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And acupuncture can help that as well. That's definitely, you know, the conservative route is very slow, and this can take a lot of conservative management.
It will be certainly less expensive than surgery.
Yeah. The loop for sure. Yeah. And acupuncture, though, the amount that you have to do sometimes can be 6-10 treatments. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Denise, thanks for the call. We go now to Celine in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Celine.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I have, thanks. And doctor, are you good too?
Yes, doing well. Thank you, Celine.
Okay. I have two cats, 3 years old. They're Burmese. They're also from the same litter, brother and sister. One of them eats all the food that I put out, and the other is at a normal weight. The male, the big one, can't seem to stop eating. I feed them all day long, and I feed them the freeze-dried chicken, which seems to be highly desired by the overweight male. And I'm just wondering how I can keep him from eating all the food, including all of hers.
Yeah. So I am a huge advocate of standing over your cats and staring at them while they eat when you have more than one.
Oh.
Well, I'll tell you, I say that in jest, but I had six cats when I was in vet school, and I had some that loved to eat and others that were like, you know, they took their time. And the only reason they even ate at one sitting is that I forced it on them. And but I do think that it's important for cats to just eat two meals a day. The food gets eaten, and then you pick it up. So it's your female. Would she be inclined to eat her meal and be done with it, or does she expect to graze all day?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, she does. Okay.
Pardon?
So, So I would either feed them in separate rooms, just make sure you're giving them the amount that they need and no more, and when they're done, they're done. And there's really – it's this easiest way – to do that. Otherwise, you're looking at contraptions and things that she can get into that he can't. And it's really as simple as just taking that 10 minutes and just watch, you know, just hang out there. And when he's done, maybe put him on your lap and play with him and keep him distracted from the food. But I do know what it's like to have a cat who just wants to eat all day long.
Now, how much do I give them? How much do they eat?
It depends on the food. I'm not sure which one you're using as far as the freeze-dried chicken. Which one are you using?
Oh, I don't know. It's in the yellow bag.
It usually it's a lot less than what's recommended on the bag. I can tell you that almost half of what's recommended on the bag, especially if you want him to lose weight. If you want him to lose weight, don't feed him what's on the bag because he'll just keep gaining.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. So one last part of it. What time of the day is best for these two meals?
Oh, whatever works for your schedule. I'm all about them working around you, not the other way around. So, you know, I like to keep my animals guessing just because they can really become
the boss.
So, 4:30 in the morning, you know, they'll be like, it's 1.5 hours until feeding time. Don't forget. So keep them guessing. That's my approach.
All right. Thanks very much.
All right.
Thanks
take care.
For the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. All right, Zach the engineer, let's take a break now, and then we'll hit the home stretch here with Chris Dallas on a Pets and Vets edition of Vox Pop. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Pets and Vets today with Dr. Chris Dallas. I'm Ray Graff. The number is 800-348-2551 from Twitter. This is, I don't know who this is from, Sue in Inlet, New York. I have a Germany Shepherd puppy. I think that's a German Shepherd puppy. Can you tell me your opinion on when to get him fixed as related to hip dysplasia and issues? That's from Sue in Inlet, New York, up by Big Moose Lake.
Yes, actually, we go to Inlet every year. It's
nice.
One of our happy places. So this is an evolving question, or evolving answer, I should say.
Okay.
More and more people are advocating for delaying spaying and neutering in dogs and cats. And the American College of Veterinary Theriogenologists.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Yes, theriogenology is the study of reproduction.
Very nice.
They have a statement on their website that states as such. However, I'm hesitant to recommend that unless we really feel that people can have a sexually intact animal and keep them from making unwanted babies. Because
what
we
is,
also have
what are the
theriogenologists?
What do they say?
Well, that's what they say. And their message is really to veterinarians, which
never
is,
fix.
No, they just think that postponing at least
for how
females,
long, though?
Females like one spay, one heat, and with males.
That can get pretty ugly.
It can. It's not fun to live with an unneutered male.
Yeah,
but
that's not fun.
It's a really fair question, and it's great to ask a lot of different people their opinion because the answer is evolving.
Okay, this one is from Joe in Colony. My 8-year-old spayed DSH, I'm not sure what that means.
Domestic short hair cat.
Okay, aren't you good? Vomits like clockwork 1 hour after eating in the morning. Mm. I feed her a major brand wet canned food. 1/6 of a can, about 1 ounce. What should I do? That's from Joe and Colony. 1 hour, like clockwork.
Yeah, 1 hour.
Yeah.
Well, I would definitely say that's not normal. And I think that's worth a workup if there hasn't been one done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would not be allergies to
could
the
be,
food?
It absolutely could be a food allergy. I'd hate to be so flippant about it and just
right.
say keep switching the food around if there's something really going on.
But you could try that first, though, right?
You could, as long as there's been an exam and a vet has gone, I'm not really sure, and
yeah.
at least palpated for an abdominal mass or something
yeah,
like that.
Okay.
You know?
This one's from Allison in Washington, Massachusetts. We have two cats that are about 4 years old. One is female, the other male. We adopted them at the same time. In the last year or so, the male cat has started going to the bathroom outside the litter box. Mm. Not all the time, but at least once a day. We keep the litter box clean. We are not sure why. Any suggestions from Allison in Washington, Mass.
And was that urinating or defecating, did it say?
It just says going to the bathroom,
yeah.
which would be a euphemism for what were you?
Yeah,
you're
well,
the doctor. I don't know.
Well, and here's the reason why I ask is there those are two completely different problems.
Right.
If the cat is urinating outside the box, you want to look at the urine
right.
and see what's going on. And if they're defecating outside the box, it means at some point, typically, they have had at least one episode of painful pooping.
Aha.
So, and that means we could have a constipation problem or a food issue or whatever. So,
now, this is not an issue where there's one box and two cats?
And that could be it, too. Although, then I would expect the cat to do it more often, like all the time. But, maybe add two more litter boxes because usually the rule of thumb is one box per cat plus one.
Ah, okay.
So
you have kitter boxes throughout the house.
Yes, exactly.
Well, it improves the quality of life. All right, this one is from Tom. Who says, folks, that's you and me,
okay.
best flea and tick topical, please?
I personally like the Seresto collar, if I'm allowed to say that online. But
you just did.
Okay, great. I like the Seresto collar for dogs especially because they, and cats, they go outside, they pick up ticks, they bring them inside. So I think of them that collar as protecting not only the animal but the people as well.
Okay.
Because it does have a repellent effect.
All right, back to our phone lines. And Zena in Pittsfield, you're on.
Hi, I have a 3.5-year-old male dog. He's a Beagle mix with a dachshund, and every time he drinks water, he ends up like, it sounds like he's choking on it, but, And I've tried, like, making it warmer and, like, raising up the bowl so he's not bending over. But it's, like, every time he drinks, he's
Choked. Boy. You sure it's not gin?
No.
Okay.
Just making, I don't share.
Making
I
sure.
Don't share that with right,
how come I can't come up with responses like that?
I don't
that's
know.
Awesome. That's a real... Does he do this with food or just water?
Just water. He eats food fine, eats treats fine, everything. But when he drinks, I don't know if he's drinking, like, too fast. He's got two different water bowls. He's always got water, so it's not like he's, like, so thirsty that I'm just giving him water and he's, like, guzzling it.
And when he chokes, is he coughing or what does he
do?
Just like, is it, like, one gag or is it?
Oh, no, it's, like, a bunch. He'll do it for, like, a good 30 seconds after he drinks.
Huh. Oh, boy. You've stumped the band,
yeah,
Gina. Well done.
I feel like I should have an answer for you, or at least a suggestion, but I am not sure what to say about that. I mean, I wouldn't mind if you were to get a chest x-ray just to make sure his esophagus looks okay. He's not really the breed that we would expect to see, like a mega esophagus. I don't know if he's having like some sort of laryngeal issue, but has his voice changed at all? Has he had any voice changes?
Nope. Barks like a champ.
Huh. And eats solid food okay.
And he's 3.5 years old.
Absolutely.
So. Any hair loss or weight gain or anything?
Nope. He's perfectly healthy besides the coughing when he drinks.
And has he done this all his life, like since he was a baby?
Yeah, pretty much. And I've taken him to the vet, and they said that there wasn't really much wrong. Like, they said there was nothing wrong with him. He's perfectly healthy, but it just makes me nervous because it sounds like he's choking.
Yeah, and then, you know, you worry a little bit about aspiration. And
right, aspiration, right? Yeah. I don't want him getting pneumonia.
I know. I mean, water's not as bad
as... He's like my second child.
Yeah, and water's not as bad as food. Like, aspirating food is a lot more dangerous. But
I
got to tell you, Zena, you've stumped me as well. I'm not sure what to say about it. And I will say, you know, when I have no idea what's going on, I turn to my acupuncture needles and just see if it gets better. And that gets back to our conversation of I would make no promises, but I would say, hey, you know, if nothing else, if we don't know what else to do, sometimes that just makes things right.
Right. But I mean,
where are you located? Your office?
Oh, me? I'm in Saratoga Springs. But where are you located?
Okay. Pittsfield. I'm in Pittsfield. It's in Berkshire County, but I'll drive literally across the
state. Oh, no, but there may be somebody closer. There may be somebody close by.
I'm not sure. Take a look.
Yeah. Check online.
The internet is your friend.
But yeah, now,
thanks a lot for the call, Zena. But as a practical matter, if the dog has grown up with this, is now 3.5 years old, has always done this, seems healthy otherwise, is it a major concern?
Not necessarily. I just wonder, is it going to progress to something? I guess aspiration would be my only concern. Is it a sign that he's not actually swallowing properly?
Yeah.
Because if there's something either neurologic going on, some sort of dysfunction, I would just worry about consequences that could come down the line. Maybe we've been lucky up to this point.
Yeah, and it's also a mystery. You want to find out why.
It is. And that's why I love acupuncture, because when things are a mystery, we don't have to have a diagnosis, you know? And
mysterious
so we just go right
solution.
To treatment. Yeah, mysterious treatment. You know,
interesting. So. All right, over to, let's see, who's next? Next here, Megan in Pittsfield. Megan, another Pittsfield caller. You're on.
Hi there. I have an 11-year-old German short-haired pointer who we adopted when he was 7, and he has some pretty significant separation anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to crate train him at 7 years old, which did not work.
Mm-hmm.
We tried pheromones. We tried calming collars. We tried, I think, just about everything holistically. So I was wondering if you had any other suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot ever leave him home alone because he will chew up all of our furniture.
Yeah. that is really hard, Megan. I'm sorry.
But he's beautiful.
Yeah.
We love him.
Yeah. And you love him. And also, that's a really hard situation. Did you say he's been like this since you adopted him? I missed that point.
So, yes. When we adopted him, they said, oh, no, we don't freight train him. He's fine. But over time, you know, within the first 3 months, we discovered not every time, but every third time or every fourth time he would chew a pillow. And then it was a blanket. And then and we tried putting him just in the kitchen and he chewed the bathroom or the basement door. And
so has it been escalating then since then?
Yes, and we sort of have adapted our lives around him now, and we just don't ever leave him home alone. And we'd love to, like, have a date night or just be able to run out to the store and leave him home and not have him destroy everything.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So I have had some success with acupuncture and herbs with separation anxiety, but it was definitely more of like an acute onset of like it was a new problem in an older dog, and it took care of it right away. It was even I was like super impressed.
So you're suggesting there was a physical reason behind the separation anxiety?
I can't tell you why it worked. This was one of those, you know, hey, let's give it a try. Nothing else has worked situations. And it was spectacular. But my experience with most other cases, which are more like your story, where this has been ongoing for a while, I don't feel as confident that we'd get some results. Have you tried actual drugs? Like, has anyone put your dog on drugs? I mean, here I am, the holistic vet.
So that's the last recommendation is Prozac, and I'm just not interested. I am giving him CBD oil for his health and for the calming effects. We did melatonin for a while. Mm-hmm. But I just don't want to, I'm a holistic person. Yeah. I don't want to put him on Prozac. I just can't.
Yeah. And I'm going to take a second. Hopefully this is okay with Ray, but I just want to tell you that one area of my practice that I had a blind eye to as far as being holistic versus going with my Western things. I've always sort of prided myself in knowing when to use one and versus the other, you know, acute versus chronic and the severity and what have you. And the one blind eye I had was to behavior. And I really, I took a lot of behavior courses as continuing ed courses, and I changed my mind quite a bit about medications. I only did holistic for a long time, and I feel badly that a lot of my patients might have been suffering unnecessarily because I was not comfortable recommending the drugs because I really didn't know how to use them. And to be honest, I still don't know how to use them that well, and I refer to behaviorists, you know, when I feel that it's appropriate for one of my patients. But I have really changed my tune, and my practice is completely holistic, but you'd be surprised about, and if you can manage it and his quality of life is otherwise good, it may not be the way to go, you know, and then I would support your decision.
Right.
I have some patients whose anxiety is so generalized that they're not even comfortable in their skin or in their home. And for them, I feel like it was inappropriate for me to not know better and to not, you know, make those recommendations. And I just, for some reason with behavior medicine, it didn't occur to me, and I've changed my tune with it. So if you guys can manage it, that's great. Have you worked with a behaviorist or like a behavior specialist, like not just a trainer?
I did go seek out, and she was wonderful. She was from Northampton, and it was definitely a multifaceted approach.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about, we did clicker training and the pheromone treatment, and I probably wasn't as consistent as I should have been.
Right.
But maybe I will. Maybe I will give modern medicine a second thought.
You could give it a thought before you do, though, because I totally understand your hesitation. Try everything at once. Like, we like to, Westerners, we like to, like, sort of, the way we think is we have to try each thing and test it separately. A lot of times it's the synergy of everything that actually works.
But how do you know what's working then?
It doesn't matter.
But then you have to do everything all the
time.
Yeah,
then you got to do it all the time, at least till you break the cycle.
We'll just do all of it.
Yeah.
I'll do all of it.
Especially if it's just for a date night.
You
know what I mean?
For a date night,
we just
want
to get out for a date. So, you know, pull out your essential oils, your pheromones, your rescue remedy, like do it all at once for a few, you know, several weeks, your behavior modifications, try it all at the same time for like an extended period of time to see if that at least breaks the cycle. And if it doesn't, then you've really tried it all. And then maybe Prozac and Xanax.
Oh, boy.
I'm sorry. It's a tough one.
Well, I hope you get that date night, Megan.
I feel your pain,
thank
Megan.
Thank you so much.
If I can dog sit for you so you guys can get out, just let me know.
No, never make that offer on the air because there are thousands of people listening.
Yeah, good
You'll
point.
Be inundated. With Michelle in Mount Tremper. Michelle, you're on.
Hi, Doc. I swear I just want to say I love you. Everything you're saying is fantastic, and I'm going to come see Saratoga.
Thank you.
I was going to ask you about scurfiness, but after listening to you for the last few minutes, I have a more important question.
Okay.
I have a 13-year-old Chihuahua. He was neutered later in life. I don't know if that matters. But he's not eating the way he used to as a young'un, and he's still a good weight. He might be a teensy bit overweight since he was neutered. And when he does poop, there's a thing going on. My vets aren't concerned, but there's a whole lot of, like, there's two or three times it takes, and they're very, very skinny. And I just can't help but be concerned that it's something. And I do workups all the time. He's actually due for one. Any ideas?
Based on that, I mean, I could be a lot of things. Did you say when he's is he straining to defecate? Did I hear you say that?
You know, I feel like he is. I mean, it takes a while for anything to come out, and a lot of spinning around, and then finally something comes out, and it's usually very scrawny. And I have gotten it tested, and I have had my vets look at it. And he seemed, you know, every now and then he just won't eat for a whole day. And, of course, I immediately run for the needles, the acupuncture needles, right. And then he's fine. It's like he's a new dog. It's like a miracle.
It is like a miracle. I know. It's crazy stuff. The one thing I would say, though, is he should absolutely have a prostate exam because he could have something going on with his prostate, and that can affect...
He gets that done because he gets expressed at least every 3 or 4 months.
Are they actually checking his prostate, though, or are they just expressing
his prostate? Yeah, he expresses him from the inside, and he does check it because that was the reason why, and I don't want to even start this, but that was the reason why I got him neutered later in life.
It was starting to get enlarged.
He had a sonogram, and they thought they saw cysts on his prostate. So that's what we did when he was 8 years old to sort of curb that.
And the other thing I would suggest is, are you doing home cooked foods? I mean, that's the other thing is I am
doing home cooked foods, and I feel like it's pretty balanced. The only thing, and he's getting fussy about eating, and believe me, I'm like a short order cook. I'll keep trying other stuff.
Yeah.
And I try to get the omega-3s in him, and he just won't touch anything with fish oil in it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of screwy because sometimes I can't even get his Daisoquin in him, and I feel like he needs that.
Maybe if the acupuncture works for him, then you may have your acupuncturist consider some Chinese herbs because that can extend the amount of time that you need to go to the acupuncturist and sort of continue the benefits and its effects.
He's an unhappy wanderer right now, which I can't say the Chinese words for that.
Oh, okay. And then the other thing was maybe it'd be a little bit of fiber in his diet. But other than that, I'm not, without meeting him and kind of getting a sense for the bigger picture.
Oh, I think you're going to have to meet him. Thank you so much. I don't want to take much time.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for calling.
Very quickly now over to Jeff in Niskayuna. Jeff, you're on with Dr. Chris Dallas.
Hey, thanks for the show and the chance to talk to the doctor.
Hey, Jeff.
Quick question for you. I've got a neighbor in my backyard who I do not know. And they, 3 months ago or maybe 4 months ago, they got what looks to be a 40-pound short-haired pup.
Mm-hmm.
And lately it's been getting very cold outside, and they're leaving the dog out for 3-4 hours at a time. Me and my wife, we have dogs ourselves. And I'm getting concerned about the welfare of the dog. Saturday it rained all day. The dog was out in the rain. I can see the dog through my backyard. Dog was out for 4 hours in the rain, barking its head off, obviously wants to come in. Question, how long's too long to leave your dog outside when it's 40 degrees?
Well, I'll tell you how long too long is. 8 seconds. That's how much you have to answer the question.
Yeah, 8 seconds. I would say 3 to 4 hours on that weather on Saturday is too long.
Okay. Well, you know what?
I would get some help with that one.
Chris Dallas, Dr. Sue Sekuli, not well. You did very well on your own.
Oh, thank you.
We'll hopefully have a well Susan Sekuli next time.
Yes, and we'll have
you both here.
Her cat expertise is always appreciated. She really knows her stuff.
So much fun having you here. Support comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 30 years. QFCC.com. Interim Healthcare, helping people remain at home for 48 years, providing companions aids at nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day, serving the Capital Region, Columbia County, Glens Falls, and Saratoga, interimhealthcare.com. Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. CapitalRoots.org for more. And Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying. Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. Thanks again to Dr. Chris Dallas for being here. Thank you for listening and for some terrific calls and emails. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Jesse King. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh boy, Bob Berman will be back at 2 p.m. to answer your astronomy questions. Write them down now, children, and join us then. Right now, stand by for news.